Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. Happy Thanksgiving. We are thankful you're including us on this day. We have a special show for you with field trips. Of course, one of them our annual pilgrimage to Vermont to see the snow geese. But this is traditionally a day to count our blessings and add to those of others. So let's start with a unique look at poverty. One in seven Americans lives in poverty. That means a family of four making less than $22,000. And what if you don't even have that? If you're there, you already know. But if you can't imagine, you can now visit Realville. Realville is a fictional town in a poverty simulation exercise in which you might be cast as 50-something grandparents who have $300 at the end of the month to raise two grandkids who don't have health insurance, or a college kid trying to hold the family together while dad is in jail. The poverty simulation takes place over several hours in a large room where life unfolds in four 15-minute segments that represent a month in the life of the poor. Dustin Speakman travels the country running the simulator. He's director of community services at the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. He joins us from the State House studios of Ohio Public Radio in Columbus. Dustin, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Well, tell us more about what happens. It's a big room. You say this isn't a game, but how does it start?
Well, it really starts generally the night before when I and my staff and the host organizations will come in and set the room. It's generally about 3,000 square feet, and around the perimeter of the room are tables with signs that identify them as the resources available to the community in the simulation. We also, at that time, train the volunteers who will staff those resources, in other words, the banker, the payday lender, and the pawnbroker. Then as the participants arrive, as they enter the room, they're handed a name badge that has their new family identification. It will have their age and sort of their family makeup, and then they'll find their home in the center of the room, which is a grouping of chairs that will have a home sweet home sign that identifies the family.
Yeah. Well, and for some of them, that might be a shelter because they don't have a home. And we understand some of the women become husbands or fathers who've lost their jobs or become ill or unable to work. Some of the men become mothers with sick children and people who need to go to food pantries. So you really shake things up.
We generally try to have fun with it and encourage people to step outside of their comfort zone. For instance, in Knox County, we had a simulation that was attended by city council folks and the mayor. And the city councilman was actually assigned the role of Stella Smith, who is an 80-year-old single adult. And we had a lot of fun with that.
Well, fun, you say, but we also understand that it becomes harrowing because everybody's assigned a goal. So give us an example of, again, some of the characters that you might embody and what their goals might be.
Well, some of the families, for instance, will start the month when the father has just abandoned them. For instance, the Perez family. Paulo Perez is the father, and he's absent. He has abandoned the family with only $10. And so the 17-year-old daughter is left taking care of her two younger siblings. And so she's got to figure out how to juggle going to school and providing basic needs for her two younger siblings. And she has no experience navigating the social service system, so it's difficult. And people enter at different levels of understanding and poverty.
So take us further. What happens next as they go through the room? What do they have to do?
We don't really give them a whole lot of help. In other words, it's kind of they need to figure out how to survive on their own. So at the beginning, I'll give some general instructions about the simulation. And a large portion of the simulation hinges on transportation, which is always a large consideration for low-income people. And so that's one of the most important things as they go through their family packet and identify what resources they have. They have a limited number of transportation passes, which they need to use to go from resource to resource. So the sister, older sister taking care of the younger siblings in the Perez family, she may have five transportation passes, and she may go to an organization that she thinks will offer her a certain service, such as Community Action, and they may need to refer her to another organization, such as Social Services, to apply for the SNAP program, formerly known as food stamps. So, you know, she may have wasted that transportation pass getting there, which creates even more frustration because she needs to go to four different stations still to meet those needs.
So let's say you had that mayor who was assigned to play an 80-year-old woman. He might see across this large event room that you're all in a senior services table that he knows he has to get to, but he has to figure out a way to get there.
Right. You know, the social service receptionist and the caseworkers and the banker are instructed not to engage with any participants until they're given a transportation pass. And that's really what creates a lot of frustration in the simulation is getting from place to place to place, trying to get everything accomplished with a very limited number of resources.
I'm reading about a simulator that took place in Mount Vernon, Ohio. Debbie Beck, who works in the Agency on Aging, was assigned to be a 19-year-old, the mother of a 1-year-old. And Judy Fields, who works with Head Start, plays a crusty shelter manager. And she scolds them, you know, have you gotten your kid enrolled in Head Start yet? And it sounds as if the people, you know, took it very seriously. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how to enroll their child in Head Start.
Right. And that's what the simulation brings out right away. I tell people in the introduction that, you know, I grew up in generational poverty in Appalachia, Ohio. And I explain that to them that, you know, I lived this and I can tell you that this simulation is not going to represent exactly what it's like. You know, there's no way to represent that without having lived it. But what we do want to do is bring out the frustration and the feeling of being on this never-ending rat race trying to meet needs. And, you know, unexpected situations will come up in the simulation where I'll hand someone a luck of the draw card that says, drive-by shooting, you need to stay in your house all of next week. For folks familiar with Ruby Payne's curriculum, Bridges Out of Poverty, this is what is identified as the tyranny of the moment. You're so caught up in meeting your basic needs that, you know, you may forget your baby on the chair, in which case the police comes by and takes the baby into protective custody.
And we should jump in to say, and of course it's a doll,
sure,
the,
yes.
the baby that you've left on a chair in the event room. But still, it is just a doll, and these are just cards that tell you you have a flat tire or something like that. But how do you see people react in that room?
You know, they take it very seriously, most of the participants, I have to say. And, you know, I was a little skeptical when I got involved with this, too. You know, how can you simulate poverty in a month? But they do take it seriously. And the most important part of the simulation, in my view, is the debrief at the end. And that's really where we give them an opportunity to talk about how they felt. And you'll hear people's voices cracking. And, you know, they say, I know it was just a doll that I left on that chair. But, you know, it really made me think about what a horrible mother I was. You know, I really wasn't horrible. I was just trying to meet my kid's need. You know, I was trying to get food for my child. And, you know, I was just so caught up that I forgot it. And it really makes people think about the barriers that we have placed up for low-income people to reach self-sufficiency.
Well, a couple things, though. We understand you had one couple that was a simulated married couple, and they got into some kind of corner, couldn't figure it out, and were literally yelling at you, tell us what to do, and they walked out.
Yes. A couple of simulations, people have just walked out in frustration saying, you know, that they just can't do it. And it's, you know, I feel bad because I don't want anyone to get that upset. But, you know, it's all about raising awareness and calling to action. And, you know, if people get upset experiencing poverty, so be it.
Well, there you go. And I'm wondering, you know, so there's that one couple that just couldn't take it, the woman in tears, they walk out.
Yeah.
But do others, in trying to achieve that goal that you've set up for them, do they choose crime?
Each simulation is different. Some simulations, they fall into illegal activities immediately to meet their basic needs. And others, it takes them a little while. There is a plant. One of the community resources, I guess, is an illegal activities person who is placed within the simulation, and we don't identify that person. But they go through stealing things out of the unattended homes in the center of the room. The illegal activities person also tries to recruit junior drug dealers to help him or her out in selling his sugar packets. And some people will jump right on that. Some people will, you know, see a $20 bill or maybe a card that represents a TV sitting at an unattended home. The participants now will grab it. So it's, you know, every simulation is different, but it's always funny to see how quickly people will go to illegal activities that they would never dream of doing in real life.
Right. Well, we understand that as part of the simulation, they might be tempted with a gun sale. They might be asked if they want to buy a gun.
Yeah, there's a big sign in front of the pawn shop that says guns for sale. And you do have to, of course, go to the police officer first to make an application to get a certificate to own a gun. Sometimes you've got an unscrupulous pawnbroker, and he'll sell you the gun anyway without the permit.
Well, here's where maybe we should say again that these are fictional scenarios, part of the poverty simulator, a chance for people to see what it feels like to be poor. Dustin Speakman is director of community services at the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. He travels the country running a poverty simulator. And Dustin, people who undergo it are normally people who work with the poor. What happens to them?
I've had a caseworker one time say, you know, I now realize the huge importance of communication in the low-income community. This was a social service caseworker, social worker. She got her phone turned off, her utilities turned off for non-payment. And she said that in real life, she was always very critical of people in her waiting room who would come in to apply for benefits, and they would have, you know, a cell phone, and they would be talking on the cell phone. And she just thought that was, you know, inappropriate. They come in here needing to buy food, and yet they're talking on cell phones. And so we started this discussion during the debrief about how when your utilities are cut off, you can't often get a phone, so you can go buy one of those prepaid cell phones. And it was just like bells started going off, and she realized that, you know, this was not a luxury item. This was a necessity.
Dustin, what do you think of the characterization of the poor? You still hear it. People who don't want to work, people who get paid more not to work. I mean, I just heard this the other day on the radio. Someone talking about, well, you know, if you get disabilities, you're paid more than if you work. So, of course, there's fraud and people are doing that. What do you think about that characterization of the poor, which it feels like we're actually hearing it more?
We are, and it's unfortunate. I feel like we're back in the 90s during welfare reform, and people's nerves are just raw on this subject. And, you know, it's a myth. It's an enormous myth, the welfare queen. You know, the lady that has six kids and she just keeps having them so she can get more benefits. That's all a myth. Here in Ohio, cash assistance is time limited. You can only be on it for a certain amount of time. And able-bodied adults are not eligible for cash assistance. On the food stamp program, or SNAP as it's known now, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, there's a work requirement. So unless you have a job or are disabled, you've got to go out and find a job in order to keep the food stamps. So it's a huge myth, and this simulation, I think, helps bring that out.
And I guess one last thing, the people who go through the simulator, poverty sounds like it's just exhausting.
It is. My boss has a saying that it's a full-time job being poor. And I grew up, like I said, in generational poverty. And I can tell you, I never saw my mom because she was working a night job as a waitress in a bar for like $2 an hour plus tips. Then during the day, you know, she would sleep in the morning. And then when I'd get home from school, she would be out at appointments or looking for work or whatever. So, you know, it is a full-time job. You spend your entire life, it seems, trying to just hang on. And, you know, there really are very few opportunities to lift yourself out of poverty.
Dustin Speakman, Director of Community Services at the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. They run a poverty simulator. Dustin, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
On this Thanksgiving, we're learning about a poverty simulation exercise developed by community activists in Missouri. About 500 kits that teach people how to do it have been sold around the world, some as far away as Singapore. We just heard from Dustin Speakman, who works at the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks and runs the exercise around the country. Judge Teresa Bollinger runs the Marion County Municipal Court in Ohio. Earlier this year, she had her staff go through the poverty simulator, and she joins us now. Judge Bollinger, I understand you had quite a response.
We ran into a really unique situation. I had asked Dustin to bring the simulator to Marion for my staff and some other court personnel and some of the other courts to participate. And as soon as the community started hearing that this was coming to town, more and more people signed up. And it got to the point where I had to call Dustin back and ask for a second.
Why do you think that is? Why were people so interested?
Well, Marion was found to be one of the poorest counties in the state of Ohio based on the population in the county.
And so what, did people who worked with the poor wanted to understand it more?
Yes, they wanted to better understand it. We put out flyers. We tried to explain on the flyers that they would be part of the simulation.
Well, now you're a judge, and I'm assuming that you got some hard-nosed prosecutors. What did you see happen when they went through this?
Well, one of our prosecutors actually was the one-year-old little boy whose mother was abused by her boyfriend, and then the boyfriend would control the money.
Oh, so the prosecutor played the one-year-old?
Yes, he did. So he just had to simply follow around his mother wherever she would go, and he had nothing else to do but to follow her.
Oh, he must have been out of his mind.
I think he was. But the good thing was that he saw what she went through. And he saw how she had to go around to look for family and go to agencies, and she had no money and she had no transportation, and how frustrating it was. It really opened his eyes. At the debriefing at the end, he said he didn't realize how helpless a woman, especially in her situation, could become when not only was she abused, but her money was controlled by the abuser, and she had nowhere to turn.
Well, but then what do you do with that information, Judge? Because you still are in the business of judging people, you know,
that's
and sentencing, yeah, sentencing them. So how does this impact what you do?
Well, what we try to do here at our court is to make our court user-friendly. We don't back off of sentencing, but we try to, once they're sentenced, try to make things easier for them to accomplish. For instance, a lot of people in Ohio and in Marion County, they don't have a license or they have a suspended license. So we have a program that takes them step by step through the process in getting their license valid again. It takes a little bit more time on the court's part, but people come out of the program with valid license. If we didn't have the program, they wouldn't know how to get their license valid. And we have a computer here in the clerk's office where they can get on the computer. A clerk will help them pilot through all of the options and find out what they need to do to get their license reinstated or to pay their reinstatement fee online and things like that.
So you grease the some of the processes a little bit. But, you know, in hearing this, you know, there are going to be some, you know, real tough on crime people hearing this and saying, oh, God, just, you know, the last thing we need is a sort of more pity, you know, for people in the courtrooms. And they're going to be worried that this empathy that you might now have might translate into, you know, less sentencing.
Well, all those people that come in front of me with a suspended license, oh, yeah, I could put them in jail. They could go to jail for days and weeks at a time. That's not solving anything. Nobody's coming out of that jail with valid license. If, as a matter of fact, it keeps getting worse. We don't have any more room in our jail. And I'm at the bottom of the food chain, as you might say, in the jail situation in our county. So I'm the last person that gets space in the jail. So my people get out anyway. So I might as well take them through a program and get them valid so that I don't even have to use jail space for the driver's license issues.
So that's one example of how you can save your sentencing for the real crime and not the,
right.
And not the crime of being poor and uninformed.
Exactly.
But when it comes to your entire courtroom, do you think there's simply more empathy that goes along with what you have to do on a daily basis, which is judge people if they've committed crimes?
Well, yes, it does. And you can call it empathy. You can call it addressing the situation. What we're doing is that we're not getting anywhere when we just keep putting people in jail, for instance, for not paying their fines. It's still not getting people anywhere. So what we have done also is we give them $10 credit to do community service. And they kind of hold some pride in doing their community service, knowing that they're getting paid or credited a decent amount like every other person that's out there working. So we do things like that. But what my staff now does is that they listen to people. They take the time to find out, okay, if when can you pay your fine or how can you do this? And so they're taking some time to better address the situation.
What do you say to people who say this is a bunch of crybabies? You know, we hear it. We hear it that this is, well, you're being soft and these people should just buck up. I mean, we hear this.
You can say that they ought to buck up, but they can't buck up. Like Dustin said, they're in the tyranny of the moment. They're running chaotic lives of instability. They can't get anything done but running between the courts, the agencies, looking for jobs. If somebody's telling me to be tough on crime, I'm not tough on crime. I'm smart on crime.
Judge, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That's Judge Teresa Ballinger, who runs the Marion County Municipal Court in Marion County, Ohio, and put her staff through the Poverty Simulator earlier this year. Thoughts? Go to hereandnow.org, click on Contact Us, or leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you.